This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
There's no better feeling than a personal win. And the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Want to get smarter about investing? Then tune in to the Capital Ideas podcast from Capital Group, home of American Funds Distributors, Inc., one of the world's leading asset managers. Each week, we bring you stock market outlooks, macroeconomic updates, and investment strategies that can help you succeed. Learn from portfolio managers with decades of experience about how they navigate uncertain markets. Prepare to be engaged, enlightened, and entertained by listening to the Capital Ideas podcast today.
But we begin today's show with former U.S. Secretary of State, former CIA Director, former Congressman Mike Pompeo. He's a Fox News contributor and author of the book Never Give an Inch. Mr. Secretary, always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Hi, it's great to be with you this afternoon.
I want to ask you, today is the one-year anniversary of Russia's wrongful detainment of Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich. He has been behind bars, wrongly accused of espionage for 365 days. I know a lot of people have been pushing to have him released. I shudder to think what it might take to get him released in terms of some kind of a swap, which would be deeply unbalanced. He was just a journalist doing his job. As someone who led the U.S. foreign policy team for years under President Trump, what would your approach be to getting this journalist home?
And these are always incredibly tough situations, and I, Susan, and I pray for Evan and for his family. These are difficult times for them. These hostage issues are as gut-wrenching a thing as one works on when you're the Secretary of State, for sure. And a second thing is, it's important to, for us all to just reiterate, you did. This is a civilian. This is not someone, as the Kremlin tells us, that is a spy conducting espionage. He was doing his job. He was a journalist. And so, indeed, his being held is deeply immoral. Our approach was always to think about what were the tools of power that someone like Vladimir Putin might understand. What might be the things that we could convince them that the United States was prepared to do in order to get this fellow back? And we didn't pay for folks to come back, guys. Just we found that to be counterproductive. They just take more hostages. The lineup would just get bigger. But there were lots of things. Some of them quiet. Some of them out of the public light that you can do to convince Vladimir Putin that the cost of holding him exceeds the benefit. And I don't want to go into too much detail about them, but suffice to say, I can tell you there were a whole handful of times during our 4 years that it actually worked very quietly, very decently. We got Pastor Brunson back. We got the three hostages out of North Korea that I was able to bring back with me on my second trip. It is possible to do if you are resolved and you make clear your expectations to your adversary.
Do you believe Evan will be coming home? Will they free him at some point here?
I do. I believe that day will come. Sadly, we're 365 days too late now. But yes, I believe that someday we will be able to convince, the United States will be able to convince Vladimir Putin that holding him isn't worth the candle. And I hope that's what President Biden is trying to do. They're often looking for like the who can they trade? How can they do that? It's a bit of a fool's game, as you can see, right? We got Brittany Griner back, right. But they just take more hostages. And so there are better ways. There are better tools by which to convince your adversaries not to do these kind of things, not to be hostile towards Americans. Hard stuff for sure. The Israelis are seeing the same phenomenon, right? They've now got dozens of folks being held in Gaza. Some of them Americans. These hostage issues are complex and difficult and always fraught, Guy.
I was going to move to Israel next, so let's go there. I was genuinely surprised, and I hold this administration in pretty low esteem on a number of fronts, but I was still a bit stunned by the vote this week at the United Nations, the abstention by the United States allowing this Israel-opposed, flawed so-called ceasefire resolution to pass. The Israelis, of course, are very upset that that happened. President Biden had summoned a new delegation to Washington to discuss the Rafah question, trying to convince Israel not to do what must be done in Rafah. Now that delegation has been postponed, delayed, or just canceled because of this diplomatic flare-up, where there is now quite a lot of daylight between the Israelis and the United States of America. And the context for this, as you know, Mr. Secretary, is October 7th, this existential war, these savages in Hamas, the hostages still there, including, as you point out, Americans. I just wonder what your reaction is to Biden policy vis-a-vis Israel, what happened at the United Nations this week, and where we can go from here.
I find that policies they've chosen to be personally abhorrent, Guy, and as a policy matter, dangerous for the United States of America. So, you know, we can go through the list. You began with this week. We allowed, that is, with American consent, we demanded that Israel conduct a ceasefire without even asking for the hostages to be returned. And we put literally no burden on the terrorists, on Hamas, underwritten by Iran. So we unilaterally sided with Hamas against the nation of Israel. That is indecent. It's inconsistent with 5 decades plus of American history with Israel. And it fits the model, frankly, from the Biden administration. They began by calling Crown Prince in the Middle East a pariah, and by de-designating the Houthis as terrorists, who are now launching missiles to take out ships in the Strait. And they negotiated to put Iran back in a nuclear deal with the Iranians. So they've had a long history of coddling these terrorists, and you can see the results. Now, dozens of hostages held, more than hundreds of Israelis brutalized on October 7th, and no indication that Hamas or Hezbollah or the Houthis have any reason to fear the United States or Israel's retaliation, because we have not demonstrated the resolve that is necessary.
Mr. Secretary, on another front, there was an interview given by the president of Mexico to 60 Minutes. It aired just recently, and he had a lot to say. He really went off, AMLO, as they call him. And he has a series of proposals slash demands for the United States of America. I want you to just listen to Cut 26. In some ways, it's pretty breathtaking. Listen here.
With the ear of the White House, President Lopez Obrador proposed his fix, that the United States commit $20 billion a year to poor countries in Latin America and the Caribbean, lift sanctions on Venezuela, end the Cuban embargo, and legalize millions of law-abiding Mexicans living in the U.S.
If they don't do the things that you've said need to be done, then what?
The flow of migrants will continue.
So the president of Mexico to our south says this massive, frankly, invasion of the United States will continue unless the United States agrees to pay $20 billion annually to certain countries, including, I'd imagine, his own, to end the sanctions on Venezuela, to end the embargo against Cuba. Those are both communist regimes, and also a mass amnesty of millions of Mexicans in the United States as well. If AMLO or anyone else came to the negotiating table or went on national television under, let's say, President Trump with those requests, what would the response be?
You know, guys, it's hard to even countenance that some set of requests like that would be made of President Trump or our administration. The conversations were just radically different. You remember, it is AMLO who ultimately, and against his initial desires, it was AMLO who agrees to remain in Mexico. So one president, one secretary of state were able to convince the president of Mexico to allow folks who declared asylum in the United States to return to Mexico and stay there indefinitely. And with a different president, he's making these ridiculous, ludicrous demands that you just described. Look, if he presented those, we'd say, yeah, well, nice try. That's not what we're going to do. And we would begin to impose real costs on him and his government for not doing their part to ensure that we didn't have these massive migrants, number of migrants invading our country, not just Mexican migrants, but people transiting from third countries through Mexico, along with the drugs they take with them. We had a model that demonstrated that we were going to preserve our southern border sovereignty, and President Biden has clearly signaled he has no interest in doing that. And you get precisely this guy, right? Once the floodgates have opened, why not, in addition to being able to have these migrants move through, why not ask for money in support of it? It seems like maybe the president would, President Biden would agree to that.
Since you invoked Remain in Mexico, I was not in the room. You were, at least to a large extent, when those policies were hammered out. Very successful policies toward the back half of the Trump administration really got the border not fully under control, but dramatically under control. Nothing close to the chaos that we've seen for the last 3+ years. AMLO is a lefty. He is a very proud man, obviously. He can make sort of galling statements like the one we just heard that we just played. I can't imagine that he just readily, happily agreed to the Remain in Mexico policy once it was suggested by President Trump and the team. To the extent that you're able to talk to us about this, how was pressure brought to bear to have this exact same leader agree to that policy that seems almost unfathomable right now?
Yes, Guy, it's absolutely true. Neither he nor my counterpart at the time, Marcelo Ebrard, who was the then Mexican foreign minister, neither of them thought this could be done. Foreign Minister Ebrard and I had been talking about this for weeks and weeks and weeks. And in the end, the president said, look, if he won't agree to it, then we're going to impose real costs on them. Think about entirely closing the border and a handful of other things. And we went down, we explained, hey, here's the option. If we don't see a substantial reduction in migrant flow, we don't see you putting Mexican National Guard both at the American southern border to stop them there and at your southern border, at the border between Mexico and Guatemala, then we're going to take draconian measures that are going to impose real costs on you. And it was sufficiently credible. This is the important part of it. It was sufficiently credible because it was President Trump that I think he understood we were prepared to actually execute that. And it became clear to him it was in his best interest to participate in the effort to ensure that these folks didn't travel across our border. It's that clear. You know this guy, deterrence is never permanent, and it is never easy. And you have to be willing to impose costs on your counterparty, or you're not going to deter them from doing the things that they're doing. And we were. President Trump was very good about that. If we drew a red line, we honored it. That means you don't draw a whole lot of red lines. But when we did draw a red line, we honored it. And sadly, the Biden administration is just unprepared to do anything to impose costs on President on AMLO for doing precisely what it is he just described. When AMLO says, hey, those drugs that continue to flow across my border because you all have a demand problem on your side, he's partially speaking the truth, but he is partially advocating his responsibility in that. And when I think of the jihadists, the cartels that sit on our other, on the Mexican side of our border as well, he has a responsibility to contain that lawlessness that flows into our country. And if he doesn't, we have not only the right, but the duty to go get them and make sure that they don't continue to present risk to the United States of America.
Well, it feels like deterrence is dead right now down there. And based on the comments that he made and the tone of the comments, he's just walking all over the current administration. That's at least his read of the situation. Unfortunately, it seems like the correct read. Last question, Mr. Secretary. It's a political one. I'm just going to put it out there because there's been a lot of discussion, as there always is around this sort of thing. Who is Donald Trump going to select as his running mate for this upcoming election in November? And the conventional wisdom holds that he's probably going to pick a woman or maybe someone of color and diversify the ticket or what have you. I'm not sure that's the type of calculation that he makes. And I just keep coming back occasionally to another name, someone who would be ready to be president on day one, someone who served in Congress, someone who was a top-level cabinet secretary who maintains a good relationship with the former president. Let's just say that phone call came in for you to get vetted or at least entertain that type of question. Would you be open to it?
Guy, that's quite a preamble there. but I'll answer the question as best I can. I don't often talk about opportunities I've not been offered, but my life has been one where I've been incredibly blessed to be an American. If I got a chance to serve and the president wanted me to serve and I thought I could make a difference, I'm almost certain that I would say yes to a request like that. If I thought I could literally help the president be successful in whatever role that might be, I'd be pretty inclined to go try and be part of the team to actually deliver good outcomes for the country.
Former U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, my guest on the Guy Benson Show. Mr. Secretary, we covered a lot of ground here. We really appreciate you opening up the broadcast with us today.
Thank you. God bless you. Have a happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you as well. And with that, let's step aside, take a quick break. We'll be right back after this.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, the Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.